Do you like books? I mean, really, really like books? Then you're in the right place. Each week, your host, Sam Hankin, interviews the best of today's top-selling authors and the up-and-coming superstars of modern literature. This is The Avid Reader. Here is your host, Sam Hankin.
Hi, everybody. This is Sam Hankin welcoming you to another edition of The Avid Reader, brought to you by Wellington Square Bookshop. Our guests today are Sarah Therese Pelletier and Scott James Taylor, authors in collaboration of Lady Hoppers. It was published by Outland, a great publishing company, and it was released just last month. So Sarah's a Canadian writer. She lives in Quebec. She co-authored her first novel, In From the Cold, and she's a voracious reader like all of us, I guess. Mm-hmm. So Scott lives in Auckland, which is 9,000 miles away, thereabouts, and Lady Hoppers is his first novel. And I think from his bio, his inspiration for writing came from Terry Pratchett, which I could say the same about me. Neil Gaiman, too, obviously his best.
Yeah.
So who doesn't like the multiverse, dragons, little green men, multi-tentacled parasites, planet-destroying reactors, zeppelins, energy weapons, exoskeletons, witches, and pirates? And the Einstein-Rosen paradox in action, coupling and decoupling, along with a smattering of Latin. So that's why you love this book, with its daredeviling protagonist, Charlie and Verity, that's the Latin, who traverse a kind of spider-verse populated by tares, which give them access to world after world, while those same tares destroy, along with their parasitic friends, the worlds that they appear in. So let's see if Sarah and Scott can fill us in a bit better than I can. So welcome, guys. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, yes.
So we talked a little bit a few minutes ago about collaboration. And if you can give us an idea, which we were talking about before, of how that collaboration came about, especially when this is vast oceanic distance between the two of you.
Well, as Scott mentioned, we met online through an online writing game. We did that for about 8 years before I approached him to say, hey, I have some ideas, want to do a book, want to do something we can potentially sell. And from there, we brainstormed quite
a lot of emails back and forth, a lot of chains of throwing ideas at each other.
Did you get woken up in the middle of the night? Did you silence your notifications?
I've had my Gmail notifications silenced for years. Yeah. It's like I'll wake up to a bunch of stuff. That's the way we work.
It's a good way to wake up in the morning.
Mm.
But sometimes, because I mean, obviously, we sold through an American publisher, so I was the one getting all of the news first. So when we got good news, I would have to sit on it for hours and hours and hours, waiting for him to wake up and hoping it's like, okay, it's 5 p.m. here, it's morning there. Hopefully, it's late enough that he'll be checking his accounts, because like we just sold a book.
Speaking of selling books, which is what this is all about, being a bookseller. And this was really a cool one. Being a bookseller, the cover is so important. And can you show it there a little bit? If you go through it, and I have it on my iPad, there are so many different elements from the novel. There's the dragons, there's the exoskeleton, is there a pirate?
Yeah, there's a pirate at the top here.
I'm pointing at the screen, you can't see.
So we got a pirate here, we got the dragon, we got the robots. The Zeppelin in the background. We also have, I can't remember what side it is, but we do have the Mars rover hidden in here somewhere, as well as a coffee shop with Vera here holding a cup of coffee along with Watts. I guess that would be the version of Watts on the cover.
Did you guys do the cover, or did you vet it, or do you have a friend who did it?
The publisher. So the publisher collaborated with a very talented artist named Chris Yarbrough. And Scott and I were asked, well, we were not asked, but we volunteered a Pinterest board, a very detailed Pinterest board with different inspirations. Then we had a bit of a chat with Chris in terms of what we were thinking for the cover. And he really ran with it.
He came back with a couple of possible layouts, and we were like, oh, that one, and then, oh, and could you switch things around? And he tried different things and was very gracious when we were like, oh, actually, no, could you go back to the first one?
It's nice because it's like, it's kind of like the cover of a really good cover of a jigsaw puzzle.
All
the elements of the book are inside. But and also the title, again, as a bookseller, the title is, you know, a killer title because it has the word lady in it, which makes a big difference nowadays. Yeah. And lady hoppers, and you get the idea, that's what they are. And
so the funny thing about the title, we never intended that to be the actual title of the book. That was our working title. That was just a joke between the two of us. It was like, oh, yeah, it's lady hoppers.
Yeah. There are and ladies then, who hop.
Yeah, but then a thing happened, like, then we threw in a reference to it in the book, again, just for us, but once it was in there, it was like, oh, that can just be the title now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we never had any... Damn. Oh, go ahead.
I said it's a damn good title. Hey, so yeah. Who did the little illustrations, which were really funny, at the beginning of each chapter?
Again, not us, although I had suggested perhaps, like, could we have, initially, I just wanted the little bullet point in between scenes to change throughout the book. So actually having the illustrations at the beginning of the chapters was a fun surprise for us when we got, it was either the final ebook or maybe one of the copy editing passes. So that was a really, really fun surprise for us. The artist who did that is Shannon. Oh, I don't remember their last name. I was just looking up his name. So it's another person who works for Outlander, who collaborates with Outland. I think he might have done covers for them in the past.
Shannon Patratz.
Yes.
Oh, okay. The most important thing, and we were joking about this before, is, and not everyone's going to be familiar with it, but a lot of the science fiction readers out there will be, is the fact that the book pivots on a lot of things, but it pivots in terms of plot on the Einstein-Rosen paradox. That was an article that Einstein, in collaboration with Podolsky and Rosen, and then later talked to Max Planck, was written in 1935. So it's somewhat obscure, but also it's kind of cool nowadays because there's so much going on about multiverses. So who came up with that?
I don't know. I mean, the multiverse angle was always part of it. In terms of where the Einstein-Rosen coupling came from, I'm not sure. I read a lot.
It's interesting. It was almost one of those things where you look for terminology and science to back up the story idea that you've already got, because we had the idea for, you know, this story that's them trying to travel through the multiverse. And so there's the idea of the tiers, and that you go through, and when you stabilize them from both sides, they close up. And then it was a matter of deciding what the technology was that Charlie would use to do that. And then sort of going through, oh, scientific, what's the terminology for wormholes and stable bridges and things like that, and multiversal stuff. Because in a lot of ways, it doesn't always function exactly like your sort of quantum mechanics-based multiverses. It sort of explicitly calls out that these places don't necessarily diverge from choices that people are making the way that a lot of multiverses do. So that was sort of starting in that grounded science world of Charlie's, where the technology is a bit more advanced and they're working on a problem like that. And then we sort of throw them into, then, you know, they hit the fantasy universe and suddenly magic is real.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the thing about it is that I've interviewed Andy Weir a couple of times, you know, who wrote The Martian. Mm-hmm. And
I love that book. That was a comp title for us, just in terms of the language and the scientists trying to figure out how to get the way to find their way home.
We've got a little bit of our little homage sort of in there, I think.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. You reminded me of it, because when you say you like to base the premise on something scientifically valid, he is so good at that because he just really is a scientist. And that was, I think that's a good anchor to the book, is the fact that you start out with something that is real because it was a very technical article. And that made a difference for me, especially whoever came up with the idea of coupling and uncoupling. You know, that concept.
Yes, yeah.
I'm not sure who came up with that. I know I did a lot of scientific reading for this, not
Yeah.
which I mean a lot of it didn't end up in the book, but just knowing how the character, like Charlie specifically, would think about something was important for me to get my mind around her character. It was like, well, how would someone who does know the science think about it? So I read Physics of the Impossible, I believe is the name of the book. I read a bunch of stuff on discarded science as well, just when they're going to more less advanced worlds, let's say. So yeah, I read quite a bit of science, but I'm not sure who coined the coupling term. I think
That
that
was
because I yeah, that was like right from the outlining stage, I
Yeah,
think.
I imagine it was just a flurry of emails of like, oh, they need a thing for this. And then I believe it was like at one stage, it was probably just a set of square brackets with device goes here.
Yeah.
And I like the way he throws it and then it goes bounces against the wall and she's so frustrated. Yeah, so that was very interesting. And then also, one thing I ought to do, because when I like a book, I talk to the authors about things that someone who hasn't read it doesn't know what they're talking about. So one or both of you should just give a short synopsis of what this thing is about, because I always forget to do that.
You want to go ahead, Scott, or I can go?
Sure.
Yeah. I
Lady
think you have
Hoppers
to.
is a multiverse hopping buddy comedy about a soldier turned scientist who finds herself stranded in another dimension with only a much more reckless and maybe slightly unhinged version of her mentor to assist her in trying to both solve the problem of what is tearing apart these worlds and get home.
Yeah, what's interesting about it is, if you could explain this a little bit too, is the characters in each universe are the same characters. They're different, but each of them reappears. The assistant, I've forgotten everybody's name. Watt.
Yeah,
Yeah,
Watts.
and Watts. And so they reappear in each universe, but they're slightly different. And again, not spoiling, in the last universe, they're really different in one way, one specific way. So how did you figure out? Did you have to like draw out, like pin things, well, like you said, pin things on a board in order to keep everything straight?
I mean, our outline kind of functioned in that capacity. Also, and part of the editing process was actually, I guess, maybe decreasing the size of the cast so that way the repetitions became more apparent. So even for some, there are some very minor characters that we decided like, oh, okay, well, why don't we just make it this minor character from this other story or from this other universe to condense them? I know that our editor did create a chart for her to keep track of. But we didn't have a chart. We just had our outline. But I know that there are some members of the editing team who did have a chart to refer to keep things straight.
Yeah, when the reviews say like genre bending, which is they say it all the time. But what's interesting about this is that you were able to actually pick up the two characters and take them from one genre to another and dump them, whether it was the Zeppelin, whether it's the Hound, whether it's the Pirates. So you were able to play around that way, which a lot of authors don't get that opportunity, which you gave to yourself.
Yeah, it was a big part of why we wanted to do it, I think, was to get that opportunity of being like, oh, okay, here's this type of pairing that we quite like of like the slightly exasperated old hand and the reckless genius type, and we'll just throw them through all of these settings and recontextualize what they're doing and play with that idea of genres and that idea of a multiverse in which, because you see it in quite a few things where there's the multiverse where, oh, they go and they meet the different versions of themselves or the versions, where everyone's a cowboy or everyone's a pirate or things like you see it in comic books quite a bit, which was sort of one of our big influences.
It's a cinematic book, I think, just like Andy Weir's The Martian was. And so in my mind, I know what they look like. which is, yes, like, yeah. I don't know how you would cast it, but Sarah, why don't you tell a little bit more, amplify a little bit more about what Scott said about Charlie and Vera. Maybe not what they look, well, even what they look like and their attitudes. I think if you flesh that out a little, I think it'll help the reader.
Mm-hmm. So Charlie, one of our reference pictures for the artist Chris Yarbrough for the cover was Steve Rogers in his stealth suit from Captain America: The Winter Soldier. We wanted that vibe. So she is sort of a genetically engineered or genetically modified soldier, because in order to traverse the multiverse, we said, well, she's a scientist. They're going to approach this as a scientist would, with technology and with biology. And so she's sort of, you know, she's a very, very physical, very capable character. And then our reference for Vera was a picture of Robert Downey Jr. As Tony Stark.
That. Yeah. I was going to say that. Darn
so
it.
We very much. Yeah. Right here. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. So that was very much, I would say that was very much intentional, I guess, the reference to that. And even we wanted a name that would have sort of a similarity to Tony Stark. So Vera Baum is, again, you have Baum as a German last name, as the Stark. That's sort of the approach there. Also, Verity Baum means truth bomb. We thought she's kind of reckless. She's all over the place. And yeah, so we wanted characters who really contrasted each other, but also by the end, the hope is that, you know, they can see the strengths that each other brings to the table. But in order to have that payoff, they need to start off quite different.
There were two things. In addition to her being a genius and sketching out things immediately, there were two things. One, her smirk. And secondly, when she picks up the exoskeleton and the visor finds itself in place. And I could actually see, you know, how his helmet comes on. It was the same kind of process, I thought, in my head. Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. Talk a little bit about, they each have suits and they're completely different, but they really save their necks in a lot of different situations.
Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons why we set the book in Montreal, this has to do with the suits, but one of the reasons we set the book in Montreal was, number one, well, not to give anything away, but figured that New York as an epicenter of stories probably no longer in the picture in any of these worlds, but Montreal is also the hub for aerospace technology in Canada. The CSA developed the Canada arm that's on the International Space Station. So we're like, Montreal seems like a good place to set this. And also, I live very close to Montreal and was going to school in Montreal at the time. So I was like very pro Montreal being the setting for this. So we have Charlie, whose suit is a bit more sophisticated, I guess. She has an older version of Vera Baum making her suit. They also have the bioengineering that I mentioned before, whereas their suit is very much a repurposed spacesuit that is being used, because her world is not being affected by this problem just yet. So she is kind of repurposing on the fly.
And it's, you know, so it's a bit gaudier, it's a bit chunkier, less sleek. It's as we call it, the marshmallow. To sort of play up the slightly more ridiculous nature of it compared to Charlie's perhaps more sleeker, soldierly vibe.
Mm-hmm. How did you, we talked about, you know, you got the buddy comedy, these Zeppelins, the coffee shop romance, the car chases, you know, like I said, it's so cinematic. The thing that runs through about dragon punching that they joke with for the entire book. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of goes to that last part where I'm not going to talk about how they bond. Yeah, so, and yeah, and like, and the pirates, how did you like, so this process, I think people would be interested in. So you were in a group online of different, a whole bunch of people that would just pitch stuff to each other. Is that how it would work?
Essentially, it's a bit nerdier than that, but essentially, yes.
Was it like Magic the Gathering or something?
Oh, no, nerdier. I think much, much nerdier than that. But essentially, yes, well, we would just, we had characters, we would put them in situations together. The only thing, it was a shared setting, but then you could sort of pitch whatever plot that you wanted within this share setting. I think at the peak there was, what, 200 players?
Wow.
Yeah. There was maybe quite a few,
but
yeah, there was
being a shared setting, there's sort of things that you could never do, some of which I would constantly pitch to them, one of which appears at the end of the book. There's a hashtagged chapter that I won't spoil, but that is a pitch that I had for the game many, many times that they would never let me do that. We finally got to do.
Did anybody else in the group like tee off on this and go off in their own direction with books, or do you know of anybody who's done that?
Yes, as a matter of fact, there are a number of authors who got their starts on this game. A lot of them are published. I won't out them. A number of them are very, very successful authors. So yes, there's definitely a history of people coming from. There's a history of people coming from this game, but also it speaks to the level of quality that the game had at the time. The game's been defunct now for, I don't know, 15 years or so, but it's, or not 15 years, but maybe 10 years or so. But yes, there are a number of successful writers who have come from this game.
It's like kind of getting an MFA in a kind of a rough-hewn way, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's lifting yourself up by your own bootstraps rather than having, you know, George Saunders teach you. But so where are you going to go from here? And, oh, yeah, so now you're published. You've collaborated, Sarah, in two books. Mm-hmm. So do you feel like you're going ahead with other projects, either of you on your own, or do you want to collaborate again? You want to switch to a different genre? What are you guys going to do now?
Both all.
We do have a fantasy novel in the works right now, and Lady Hoppers could potentially be expanded. We will see. So that's also a possibility that we've discussed with the publisher. So that might be, you know, if the sales justify it, why not? We have ideas.
Yes, your own cinematic universe.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean, you know, it's self-contained. But you can definitely see sequels coming off of it with other characters being added. Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm. They work well together. It's like any other superhero, you know, it's a team. It has to be, so they can play off of each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it was very important for us to have for it to be self-contained. Like, that was a conversation that we had throughout the process.
Well, so yeah, thank you so much for being on. It was a pleasure talking to both of you. And I look forward to, you know, and the good thing is about having a bookshop again is that sometimes books that might not be sent to us by Ingram or somebody else, I can pick and choose. And then when I put them on the front table or they go into our book club, I think it really makes a difference. So thanks for bringing it into the world, and I'll try and foster it as well.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. We're thrilled that you enjoyed it so much.
Yeah, that's why you do it. Yeah.
Oh, and like I was saying to you before, it's the kind of book that, you know, it's bad. You know, I read it in a chair, thank God, because I'm 71 years old. So like if I'm lying in bed now and reading, it screws my neck up. The book, I fall asleep. The book's on my chest. But this time it was really good because I could just sit in my chair and go straight through it. And it was really well worth it. So. Thanks again.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.